All right, it's about time to get going again. If you're not here, raise your hand. And we'll wait. Could you guys tell people outside if there is anybody that we're...
There are a lot of people outside.
Are there? Okay.
The whole world is outside.
Well, all of those people should be in here. Hey, Greg, could you tell people outside if there are any on the porch that it's time to come in? And Mac, let's get your headset on and try not to sit in front of the speaker, although I'll pan it, I guess. Okay, great.
I'll still stand in front of the speaker.
Yeah, the handheld seemed to work better for that purpose. So thank you all for coming back here, and we're going to... Steve, let's stop that thing there. You don't have any computer thing, do you, Matt?
No.
Mac? Kurt, is there anything on your computer that we should be looking at?
I don't think so, no. Unless at some point you want me to hook the tester back up to it.
Yeah.
Shall I hook it back up to him? What would you like?
Or not. Let me just shift it to... We'll shift it to a map of our area here, just for curiosity's sake. And Mac and Kurt and Rick are going to talk about measurement now, and measurement devices. Oh, I'm sorry. God dang it! We got to do the drawing first. Door prizes first.
Okay, so last chance for anyone to fill out a slip if you haven't done a slip for the fabulous door prizes.
Okay. Hey, how you doing? I haven't shook your hand yet today. Nice to see you. So you must be present to win.
Must be present to win. Yes, physically at least.
Yes. AES employees are allowed.
So what is the must present to win?
The first prize, yes. You must present to win.
So we should say what's in this as well.
Okay.
These are mystery bags.
These are mystery bags.
So
Dave is going to tell us about them.
Which were, I believe, Rick Chen provided these for us.
And Renee,
okay. And Mackie. And these were originally holding a piece of Mackie gear. What they now hold, however, is
oh my God, it bit him.
Is a long fire wire cable.
An adapter.
And a little wall wart. So that's just so you can't say that all I got was this empty bag.
Yeah. So put this in your emergency kit.
They're very attractive.
In the back of your car.
They can be used for a small lunch or a flask, I guess.
We have two of those.
We have two of these. Okay.
Are they the same?
So they are the same.
They're close enough.
We're assuming they're the same. So who would like to draw? Like
I will. I don't think I stirred him up.
How could you screw
him up? Stirred. David Francois.
I think
he left. Oh, this is why you want to stay. Aaron Gates. Is Aaron Gates? Aaron Gates is here.
Great.
If Dave Francois walks in, we'll put him in the... Nope. Okay. Okay, Gary, are you saving those?
Yes, please.
Okay. And the next one is a weather-protected and dry version of the same one. So Aaron got the wet one, here is the dry one. And this is Rick Smargiassi.
Oh, he had to leave.
Oh. Oh, he's going to be bummed. Brooks Shepherd. Yay! Hooray. Don't have to walk very far. Congratulations. And the final prize is a Meyer Sound little shoulder bag from Meyer Sound.
Speaker's not included?
No speakers. No, no, nothing in there. Rick Rodriguez. Oh, wow. All right. Oh, yeah, we're going to do... So the other thing we're doing, Kurt is holding a 200-foot Cat 5e cable, and we are going to destroy it in the middle later, and we're also going to destroy a 137-foot one in the middle later, and we're going to cut the bad parts out and put connectors on it, and you then can are going to win a 100-foot or a 67-foot Cat 5e cable. So that's what this is for. So there'll be four.
The only catch is we're going to do it at the very end.
Very end. So.
That's at midnight.
And you yeah. still must be present to carry the cable.
Well, no, you're going to, you got to fetch it. Steve Wilkins. Okay, and we'll start with the 100-foot lengths and go to the funny odd ones. So I'm going to go here. Gary Louie.
How long
it'll be a 100-footer.
So
he gets a 100-footer, you get a roughly 100. So you're both going to be roughly 100 foots. And these others will be Greg Mauser is going to get a 60-ish foot one. And Lindsey Smith gets a roughly 67-ish foot one. So Lindsey... And was it Greg was the last one before? You guys get the ones that the scissor lift is going to run over. And the other guys get the ones that the truck is going to run over. Okay? So now, Mac, we are ready to go here, I think maybe. And Mac Perkins.
Okay, well, this is supposed to be the measurement portion, and I think we've already gone over a fair amount of that with the demonstrations with his analyzer, which is convenient because it's got a nice tie-in to the screen. What I have here is the ancient analog version, which you can see some stuff on that you can't very easily. I'm not sure that we'll be able to get a reasonable shot of it. I guess... No, that's well. I guess
think we have enough focus.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've got a 2-inch screen here, so I guess really, I mean, I think we covered a fair amount of it. I guess I would be tempted to see what questions people have, since I have not had enough time to sit down and figure out any formal presentation.
I'd like to hear about the different devices that are used, and specifically what a TDR. Does to do its thing.
And what they cost.
And what they
yes.
cost.
Okay, TDR is time domain reflectrometry, which basically you have a machine that sends a narrow electrical pulse down a cable and then looks at the reflections coming back. And it's very sensitive to any kind of distortion in the cable jacket, folding of or untwisting of pairs. It really gives you a very good picture of what's going on in the cable. It's also sometimes known as cable radar because it's basically a radar type technique. I have my fairly ancient analog one here that I actually prefer. I've got a nice digital one too, but I can see things with this I can't see on the digital because it smooths it out and makes it look pretty. Oh, I see. Oh, there's a camera in there. Look at that. That didn't sound good.
If anybody has a USB to mini USB, I could take a still picture and put it in my computer and then put it up on the screen.
That's not bad.
Okay,
now if you look at this, you'll see there are a whole bunch of little spikes, and that's noise. I don't know if it's from cell phones or from the towers over in Queen Anne. My money is actually on the towers. I discovered that if I put my hand in exactly the right place, it goes away. What you're seeing here at the at this edge is the pulse that it's firing out. And I have a funny adapter here that I made so I can connect these cables.
Does this look
at
one pair?
Yes. This standard TDR is a one cable, one pair device. I have a clever little plug here, and this plug here, if I put them both on, it puts all four pairs in tandem, one to the next, so you can look at all of them. Okay, so let's see if I can get the noise to go away. Okay. There. Okay, this first step here, need another hand. This step here is the end of the cable. And by manipulating the controls here, Dan?
Yeah.
I think I may break down and get that headset, since I don't have my third hand here. Okay, now if I put my hand in just the right place here to shield it. Oh, that's better.
That's good.
Yeah.
That helped a lot.
Oh, okay, good.
Can you move it any closer even?
I don't. Kind of stuck because it was strange.
You got any more zoom?
We can see. I don't think so.
That's not bad.
That's so far.
I'm happy with it. Move over to the right a little bit.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
Look at
that. Hey, all right. You can look closely, you can read the serial number. Okay, so I'm going to increase the scale a little bit.
Now you can see that noise.
Yeah, the noise is great. This is the end of the cable, and I've got a calibrated knob over here, which you can't see. And this is my zero point there. So I adjust that. Zero.
It shows you that noise has nothing to do with the cable.
Right. Has to do with my funky adapter. And I move this to there, and I can read out, and according to this, this cable is 68 feet, which is pretty close. By increasing the gain here, let's say this is all analog, so it isn't necessarily pretty. But you can see there is a little bit of change as I monkey with the cable. And Steve said this stuff is the most rugged stuff they make, so maybe I should get a crummy cable.
Oh, I didn't say that. I said it's really rugged. There's more rugged than that.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I had the other end here a minute ago. There it is. I can also put my other adapter on here, which will loop it back. And let me go back to this display, and you'll see it gets a bunch longer. Now it's out there. And not too surprising, this mod says 248, give or take a little. But I think I may have a problem with the noise, but I know when I tried this at home, I could see the connectors. And the noise floor is high enough, I'm not able to see them. That's annoying. Dan, do we have another? Oh, wait a minute. Can I borrow that bad cable a minute?
Yeah.
Because that one does show up. This one picks up a lot of noise. To the point where it's, I'm not sure I'm going to get a real reading out of it.
Is this difficult to have this kind of situation?
I must admit that I have not run into this level of noise before.
Because we're thinking so hard?
Not me.
Can you do the fluorescent lights?
Well, that's a thought.
Could be all sorts of things, yeah.
Should we be
no, this is pretty high power. My money's on the top of Queen Anne over there.
We could turn off the lights and see if it makes a difference.
Yeah, good.
Do
you
have any shielded?
But your shop was not any closer, not any farther or closer to Queen Anne than this. Did you have that noise in your shop?
No.
Huh.
But our shop building has also got a lot of steel in it.
Huh.
I think there are about three places in the shop my cell phone works reliably.
Huh. No, not a thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect it. I would think that it's more likely coming from my cell phone, for example, but I tried putting that away, and it's the same thing.
Huh. Well, we probably have a room full of cell phones.
Yeah. Yes, but mine is right next to it. So.
But the sure
works. Square wall.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe we should move to the next thing. Whatever that is. How about other devices to measure cables?
Well, not specifically cables, but there are some really neat boxes that are network analyzers that actually look at all of the data flowing through and check it, and they will give you a complete readout. As I said, there are some of the fancier network switches have got relatively low-end versions of them built in.
Could this noise be your microphone transmitter that's sitting right there?
It just went clean for a second.
Oh, good call, Dan.
We just go around the city and turn things off until it gets
ready. These things digital?
Yes.
Yep, that one did. Good call.
Remember that.
Oh, that's much better. Okay. All right, well, let's see if we can do better here. Okay, now we're seeing all kinds of interesting wiggles here. And if I get my scale really down here.
What are you adjusting right there?
Okay, there are a couple of adjustments. This is the distance it's looking at total.
Okay.
This is basically the gain, how much change in reflection we're seeing. And as you can see, this cable is, this is the zero point right here. And then by turning this dial, I can move this over here. So with my funny adapters on here, this is 17.2 feet, give or take a little. But the real weirdness is in this, which is kind of haywire together. Well, it was fast.
Is that actual baling wire?
Oh, I didn't think of that. No. But so we've got one that is at, it starts getting interesting about there, which is about, let's see, times 10. About 0.6 feet from here, which is about right. And I get past all these connectors, get out here, it looks pretty decent. And that's...
So a squiggle means a problem.
Yeah.
Of some sort.
Yeah, I mean, this is nice. And then that's the end of the cable.
Okay.
And you'll note that there are some slight squiggles in the middle. It's the loopback connector. The one with the little flags here makes things really interesting. I'm not getting as much variation.
Can you remove those connectors now so we'll see whether it cleans up or not?
Well, I can pull the far end, maybe, which makes no difference to the near end. Let me go out and scale here some. You'll see the cable gets a whole bunch shorter. And basically anything past the end here is noise. You don't care about it.
Is there meaning to the shape of the squiggle?
Yes.
Little parts of it.
Yeah. If it goes up, it's an increase in impedance. Down is a decrease in impedance.
And that's really looking at the spacing between the two wires and the bear that he's chosen.
Yeah. Is this a sacrificial cable?
Yes. Connected to the wires.
Let me see if I can do something nasty to this. And we're going to see it.
It just kind of shows you that a connector is not like a piece of cable.
As much as I'd hoped.
It's not a very compressible jack.
No, it's not. I wonder if I can get something
right
here. Yeah, I was hoping to get... let me get down in the middle here.
And the Fluke meter has this capacity in it as well.
It does, but on yours, it won't do it real time.
Right.
On my older one, it will do it repetitively, not quite real time, but a little closer. I have the older version.
And the display looks the same? The one that we saw before had a 25% plus or minus.
Ah, there we go.
Scale on the Y.
What are you doing?
I'm squeezing it fairly vigorously.
I am.
So you see this isn't open here. By squeezing it, I don't know if I'm actually introducing an electrical short there. Might be. I think that definitely is doing something really bad to it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is an electrical short. Not as sharp as would be nice, but...
This is the door prize, right?
the cable, sure.
Actually, what we're looking at is what's going to happen to the door prizes, right? As we squash them, this is what it's supposed to be doing.
As you can see, there's a reason that these instruments are not in as much favor, because there's a fair amount of interpretation involved. Installers and people don't want to mess with these. They want something like that, where they plug it in, says yes, no, and they get on to the next job. If you're curious and like to poke at things, then you have something like this, so you can. I tend to be fairly curious.
Is this the only version of this device?
Oh, no, there are lots of people that make these things.
Is there a handheld version?
Yeah, there is.
What is it?
There are several out there.
Schwartz.
Yeah, oh God, yes.
They're thousands of dollars.
Oh yeah.
These are expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
But do they have data acquisition cards between the pieces as well?
Oh, that's a good question. I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised. The only thing is it's relatively tricky to do it, because you have to, I mean, you can do, if you've got a good pulse generator and a good scope, you can do this trick. You set it to fire a really narrow pulse. You want to put a clamp diode on the input of the scope so you're not saturating it, because that pulse is going to be very high amplitude. And then you can actually do it. I've done it.
And you realize the output is the input, that you're sending a pulse down the pair and listening to the reflections coming back.
Yeah.
So it's coming in the same place that it came out. That's why he's talking about protection and stuff.
Yeah.
In a TDR, an actual TDR, it knows that the input is the output.
Yeah, and these things actually use a tunnel diode, which is they're getting pretty hard to find. It has very specific characteristics, and if you apply any external voltage to these things, it tends to blow it up. So I've got a couple of these in there. The other one, that diode is bad. And when they show up, they tend to go for a couple $100, which is as much or more as the instrument is worth.
So since that's real time, what does one of the cheap patch cords look like when you flex it?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. This is a fairly good cord, though.
Yeah, that's
this,
a
pretty
good cord. Did you bring the cheap ones?
Give me the one that's on the core there.
This one?
The one that's wound up.
Oh,
might be able to see something else.
I think it will make a great crossover in the analog domain for a four-channel speaker.
No.
Oh, really?
Not enough turns.
Not enough turns.
Unless you put an all in series in exactly the right way. Now we've got, still got the same wobbles right at the beginning. Let's apply a force to it. The other thing is, of course, this thing is really designed to deal with coax. And I have my little video balun here, which works remarkably well. But that's the reason for some of these, about half of these wobbles here at the beginning is the video balun. If I disconnect the wire, you'll see that basically half the screen is this.
Is that a 50 ohm? That TDR is 50 ohms, right?
Of course. So there's also a 50 to 75 ohm mismatch.
Yeah, it's a mismatch there, and then this mismatch, Well, then the balun goes to 100 ohms.
Yeah, I have done it just on binding posts, but sometimes it's better to be balanced. Yeah, it's disappointing. It might be just a little bit of variation, but it's mighty subtle.
So we can't see your hands. You're flexing the connector? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
No, flexing the cable.
I'm doing various unnice things to the beginning of this cable.
So the fact that you're having not much effect on it means that it's resistant to this.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
UTP is remarkably good. If I do that to a piece of coax, you'll see it right away.
And are you seeing an effect from the inductor aspect of it?
No. Not really.
Okay. That's amazing, isn't it?
What the inductor is probably going to do, what I'd expect to see, is a difference in the propagation time. It's an inductor. Or you're making an inductor. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I can't even get that to fold up. Okay, well.
Are we looking at a different part of the cable? No, but that's a front.
Yeah, actually, I've disconnected the cable and I just have my balun on here. I was kind of hoping that I don't really want to destroy this, but I was hoping that I could see a change. But I'm not seeing much.
So on the screen now, I'm showing...
this is just this little piece here, really.
A chart of the results of using the DTX on that cable without it being wrapped around the pipe and then with it being wrapped around the pipe. And the pointer is in the propagation delay measurement, and there's a 1 nanosecond increase in propagation delay because of being wrapped around the pipe. And that would seem not significant to me. 1 out of 57, 56, 58. So who cares about wrapping it around pipes? The unshielded twisted pair doesn't care, right? Is that what I get out of that?
That might be a little strong, but I think that it doesn't seem to bother it much.
Yeah. That did fail my test, although, Kurt, you ran a test earlier and it passed.
It did pass on the if you ran it as a channel rather than a patch core.
And it failed.
I'm sorry. Yes, passed as a channel.
It failed on the crosstalk when I ran it. And it had a minus 0.3 margin instead of a positive margin. And probably the reason is because I was using the barrels plus that extra cable, the two extra cables, because I was adapting all of my test conditions here to fit the EtherCon cables. And the tester cannot physically connect to an EtherCon. So rather than taking the EtherCons all apart, I used barrels and the cables that came with the Fluke meter, which are pretty high-quality cables, I believe, to adapt. And so all of the measurements that I took, including this one, were through the barrels, which caused some loss. So it passed for Kurt plugging it straight in and failed for me by barely using the barrels. So who cares about the ferrous? Twist your cable around the stage legs all you want.
Yeah, probably. Unless there happens to be a magnetic field somewhere nearby.
Uh-huh. Dave, do you have a magnet here of any sort?
No.
Okay. Anybody got a magnet in their pocket?
Actually, it's not a magnetic field.
No, you need a transformer.
Oh.
Electromagnet.
Huh.
See if it's more sensitive to your wireless mic.
Oh, that's a
yeah. Good. Good call.
Then we have to decide if it's the analyzer or the cable.
Right.
Or actually my adapter.
And do you need to make the scale smaller so we see more cable? There you go. I think it fell off his head, maybe. Is your mic on your head still?
Yeah, it is.
Huh.
Oh, it's the dead switch. Battery, it says here.
Oh, really?
It's interesting, it's got enough battery to save dead battery.
Some guys always replacing batteries.
Here. Somewhere. It's got an assortment of batteries.
Yeah, that's right. I'm impressed that it still has enough to save.
I won one of those little pocket folders here. And it wasn't working too well. It was just tattered, so the battery was dead. I think it was just resetting.
Push the switch on.
It's not working better.
I thought I took it out the same way I put it back in.
The other on.
The other on.
No, look at that. I've got lots of battery now.
Okay, good. That's affecting it.
No. Was it? Yeah, a little bit. There's a little bit of noise in there. Oh, yeah, right there.
I can see something right there.
Yeah.
And is that the pipe wrap or is that the cord? The other cord, or is there another cord? I can't see.
I think it's just the cord.
The cord, not counting the pipe wrap. You think it
is? Yeah.
Well, the cord is the antenna.
Well, if I go for the near end of the cord, it just goes nuts. But.
Okay. But the fact of the pipe wrap is irrelevant.
I think so.
Cool.
I think it's just capacitive coupling into the cable.
Yeah. So forget everything you've heard about not wrapping it around ferrous metal. Right? Right?
I wouldn't go that far.
Not a very exhaustive test. But
yeah. True. With one sample, it's definitive.
Yeah. Just because we got away with it once doesn't mean it's a good idea to try it. We were talking during the break, one system where cables got run in a dropped ceiling, and they got run across a couple of troffers, which I'm pretty sure had magnetic ballasts in them, although they might have been electronic.
And a troffer is what?
A fluorescent light that gets dropped into a suspended ceiling.
Okay.
And we were having some really interesting data errors on that run. And the solution was to reroute the cable slightly. But that can definitely screw stuff up. I suspect also that fluorescent might not have been grounded properly, because subsequently we found some that had not been done properly. But I wasn't looking for that at that point.
If I can interject for a second as a matter of perspective, this could still be a solution that would be superior to what you would get with an audio tie line. Case in point, at the Seattle Center, years ago I was called in when I was repping Steve's company, Rain, because they were having a lot of mechanical noise getting on the audio tie lines running around the stadium there, or the arena. So we put in one of Steve's CobraNet systems and ran all the audio over the digital line and didn't have any problems with noise off the mechanical at all.
Second problem there was the snake was full of water, and the analog snakes eventually die from that, but the fiber is okay in water, so.
Was that in the Key Arena?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they also had some really interesting low RF and ground loop issues in that building. Rick left. We spent a fun day with a large ferrite bar antenna that I made and wound with an analyzer going around tracing ground paths. It was an instructive day, and there's some really interesting harmonics coming back from the VFDs in the air handling system. VFDs are variable frequency drives, for those who don't know. And the way they do it is they take the AC from the power, turn it to DC, chop it up, and make a variable frequency and voltage output. And the older ones, which of course those ones were not very well suppressed. So they threw, and the way they did the suppression was shunt it all into the ground.
Which motors were these, right?
Air handlers. Quite a number of them and big ones. So, I mean, when we finally figured out a way to measure it, I got a really, really big amp clamp, flexible one, and we were measuring about 4 or 5 amps in the conduits.
Wow. Garbage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. And the frequency response to the amp clamp wasn't good enough to really see all the stuff that was there.
Exactly. Very, very broad range of frequency.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I say, those old VFDs.
No suppression.
Not much, no. Or what they did suppress, they just dumped it to ground.
Right.
So can we move on to what devices someone is likely to be able to afford to be able to measure their cables to see if they are functional?
I want to know what those little testers right there go for.
The DTX, it's like $9,000 for the tester, and then if you've got the test patch cords of various types, it's about $1,500 for each set of probes. But it does come with the adapters for doing channels and permanent links. So if you're doing mostly premises kind of work, you probably don't need patch cord adapters, and 9K with the video.
Yeah, there's also an ongoing issue. This is the permanent link adapter, and there's a little end here. Let's see where it go. Can you zoom back a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, this little piece right here on the end, which is a little circuit board that comes off, has a finite lifetime because you're putting in and out of jacks. This one here, the little tab that holds it in, is broken. I'm waiting to get a new one because that little piece is $315 for a pair. And they're smart enough, there's some smarts in here, it keeps track of how many times it's been used. And you only get so many uses before it rolls over and says, nope, too many, won't meet specs, buy a new one. So.
We should just send you a new one in the bill.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. They're amazing instruments, and they, you know, they tell the truth. You can find stuff with these that there's really no other way you're ever going to find them. I mean, testing cable plants, I've found some really interesting things. I had one contractor. I had one run. This is an impermanent building. One run that just was weird. And I didn't have this with me. I went back, got it, went out there, and it was about a 250-foot run, and about 180 feet, there was this bizarre reflection. And I looked at it for a while. It was on all four pairs. That's a splice. And then I looked at the surface printing on the cable, which can be useful, because according to the surface printing, there's 8,000 feet of cable there. So they'd run out of cable. Electrician had twisted and soldered and taped and pulled it into the conduit. It was hidden.
And nobody will ever be able to tell.
Yep. Well,
I have a related horror story.
Yeah.
I did a church install in Salt Lake City. And we had the same kind of problem, and we got the nice Fluke meter, and it told us that at 107 feet, there was some reflection on one of the twists, and it was, you know, a 200-foot run, so we pulled the cable out of the building because it was just above the ceiling in the plenum, so it was easy. And at 107 feet, one of the twists was spliced together, just one of the
Oh, my God.
So they never bought from that manufacturer of cable again.
It was from the factory?
Yeah, it tells it was 107 feet from the end. Yeah. You knew exactly where that twist was.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's TDR. So how they do that distance?
I got something to add to this. I have a little. If you're talking about a cheap, handy pocket version of the $9,000 unit, the Microscanner Pro, it's like a little TDR unit. And you can tell the distance to open or short, as well as measure the wire mapping so you can check your patch cables. And you program it to a specific cable to make sure everything's lined up correctly. But a little pocket TDR, and it's hands-on, so if anybody wants to play with it, here's the book stuff, and you guys can...
It's also food.
How much is this guy?
It's under 400.
But, Dan, what was yours?
I brought one too.
Dan has got a Greenleaf, which I had not seen before, which is I got one of the little Philippians too. The thing that's cute about Dan's is it appears to do TDR on each pair.
I seem to have a dead battery in this one too. It's nothing that's going around.
That's more affordable,
yeah,
right?
So this is 300 and something everywhere, and Amazon is $259.
You write down the block.
And you write down the block, so it's doing its test. And maybe I should put it on the camera.
Sure.
Your mic on?
Anybody wants to be hands-on? More
yeah. Oh, okay. No, I wasn't. Sorry.
The TDR by pairs.
Yeah.
I read the
way.
So this is the display screen. And it is showing the four pairs. I have a thing here. So there's the pair one, I guess.
Come in here.
No, I can't see the book.
Oh, keep going.
More.
Whoa, there.
There you go. So one and two. Are these pairs in order? Is this the pair order? So it's pins one and two, pins three and six, pins four and five.
Right. That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Pins seven and eight. It'll show you continuous. If this was shielded, there'd be an S there with a line there. And it gives you the length of each pair because the lengths differ because of the twist.
It doesn't give it number two. Let me unplug it. It'll give all four.
Yeah, I don't know how it blocks.
Maybe.
Is it
it only measure in feet, or does it go down to centimeters?
There is a setup screen in there somewhere. I don't know that it goes to that tiny of a weight. There is the ID thing always there, and maybe there's a thing to tell you to get rid of. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, if you unplug it from the ID thing, you get the length of all of them.
Oh, okay. That's why I was getting all, because it came without the ID thing.
Let me plug it into a long cable.
Get out of the way. And I got that because when I first got these consoles, I connected it up, and I was getting signal at the far end and control, but I couldn't get signal into the console, and I couldn't figure it out. And then I tried another wire, and it worked. So then I realized that I didn't have any way to measure the things. So I got this gizmo, and it told me that the first cable only had three pairs, and it didn't have four pairs. It's some other thing than a Cat 5.
Okay, and I notice that it's coming up with slightly different lengths.
Right.
Different twist rates?
Yep.
And any way to increase the resolution? I mean, a foot is a long distance. That could be 26.9.
What do you want for $200? Just cut out that couple foot piece.
Oh, sure. But I'm just asking, is there adjustments that change the resolution?
You get what you pay for.
I'm
not complaining.
I'm
asking a question.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't think so.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, for a couple $100.
Yeah. And these, the one Rick has and this one are both TDR.
Yeah.
That's TDR stuff to do. So.
But if you just run an audio down this stuff.
Say again?
I was saying, if you just run an audio down this thing, it's no big deal.
Unless it doesn't work.
And
then you don't know why it doesn't work.
If you're just running an analog audio signal through this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
the conductor.
Right.
The big question, this is, Dan and I have had a couple of long conversations about this. I mean, since the whole point of all this is running digital audio, what is really required to transmit digital audio? And they're using the Ethernet cabling. They are not using the what is regarded as Ethernet signaling packets and all that. It's different.
Unless it's ABB, which is sort of Ethernet.
ABB is Ethernet, but digital audio is not.
Right. I mean, well, specifically, what Dan's console used is SuperMac, which is a variant on AES-50.
Correct.
And it uses data and clock separately on pairs. It's at least what I read was it's 100 megabit signaling rate. And the thing that came to my mind, since they're doing audio and clock separately, is at which point does this different length become an issue? And that's why I was interested in the propagation delay differences. Because, I mean, ultimately, what the propagation delay is, we don't care as long as it's not in the multi-millisecond range where we start to hear it. But it's a question of, how they've designed their receivers and transmitters. And since Dan says there's no standard or doesn't seem to be any commonality between different manufacturers' cables as to which ones are twisted at the higher rates and are therefore longer, they've got to have some way of figuring this out. And you never found anybody that could really tell you exactly what that was in the beginning.
The description of SuperMac says that it's easy to access the error correction for the user. And this console that we have here today does not do that. The higher end Midas owns this technology, or KT owns it, I guess, and Behringer owns KT and Midas. The higher end Midas's do allow user access to the error correction stream, but apparently these don't.
Yeah.
So.
And really, if you want to know how it's going to affect you, that's what you need. You need something that can drill down and tell you
in real time.
Because
it's monitoring all the time. what's going on. So
yeah,
if it's
but you got, you've probably got other things to do if you're running a shell.
Yeah.
But at least when you set up and you get your cables in place,
yeah,
take a look at it then.
Or if you're in diagnostic mode in the shop,
yeah,
to figure out what's going on with your cables. Paul?
Yeah. The discussion so far has been pretty much, I think, point to point. They were talking about cable here and the cable here and testing that.
Right.
And what happens when we start throwing in switches to things? And what about different manufacturers?
No such thing as switches in this.
They don't switches on these pieces?
No.
No. It's not Ethernet packets.
Okay.
In terms of the way, at least, AES50/Supermac is not Ethernet packets.
And you are exactly running point to point, and you're not putting a network in. You're not putting a switcher or a router in the middle.
Yeah, you could.
You're connecting this to that.
You could run through building cable.
Yeah.
Right.
But no switches, no routers, none of that.
Ethernet and ABB.
Until you get to ABB, exactly.
Yeah.
This is, in fact, an ABB switch I'm holding over here. The very first one from one of the Belden companies, Hirschman. And they showed this at NAB and then gave it to me, so, which is nice.
Cool.
Then are we looking at the situation cable length max? Because we're not talking Ethernet.
100 meters.
100 meters, regular Ethernet.
Still, yeah,
all those rules apply.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though it's point to point, it's still maximum 100 meters.
100 meters.
Yeah.
Until you get to fiber, of course, and then you can go a lot farther.
And presumably the four jump or four link limit in the middle too, right?
For yeah, I've never asked about that. I'm going to ask them because I'm sure there is a limit. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. In PA work, we would want a single cable so that you have minimum places to disconnect in the middle.
Sure. Less points of failure.
Yeah. Is there more measurement discussion to do? Because if not, I want to continue on here. We've got a lot more.
I'd say go for it. Yeah.
Any further measurement questions? Yeah.
So when you talk about the labels to plug in such an environment, isn't there a reference clock and does that help compensate?
In Ethernet, every output is the clock. And there's a clock inside every switch. So I assume if you have an Ethernet port, there's a clock there too. And these clocks have like nanosecond accuracy. So.
Yeah.
But.
So does it compensate for, variances between the pairs of cable and things like that?
No, I don't think that's.
Actually, when you're doing gigabit, they're interleaving four bidirectional data streams.
Sure, and but that's why you want low skew.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, if you look at the signaling specification for gigabit, they're actually doing five voltage levels instead of three. There's a lot of trickery going on there. But,
and they do specify 45 nanoseconds
right.
as a maximum delay between all of the four pairs.
But here's the interesting thing about any Ethernet signaling system. It's non-deterministic.
Yeah.
In other words, you can put data in now.
But it doesn't mean it's going to come out.
The time it comes out the other end, out of the switch.
It's when it feels like it.
Exactly. It depends on how much other traffic there is, which is why a conventional network is not that great for audio. You really want, ideally, you want your own dedicated network.
Well, that's precisely what ABB is about.
Yeah.
It's about prioritizing parts of your network. So if you have audio or video streams, you put those in priority. And the current generation of this is 2 milliseconds delivery through 7 hops, which is 6 switches and a source and destination device.
So then there's no notion of error detection and correction.
That's correct. You've turned that off. And they assume that you own the network. So how can there be a collision? You're the only user.
Steve, you guys have been doing this for a while. What have you run into?
Let's see. It is generally true you tend to want to have the physical network be dedicated to audio. But that's not always true.
I want to get this on the recording here.
So we make... I've been making these CobraNet-based products, which is an Ethernet transport, and the key to the Ethernet transport for CobraNet and this Dante protocol and Ethernet ABB is they all solve this problem Mac was talking about where Ethernet is inherently non-deterministic. You don't know how much time it's going to take, and all of these protocols solve this by putting a device on the network that generates a clock that you want to think of like a word clock, like you're used to a word clock. And so this device generates an Ethernet packet, and it gets sent to all the devices on the network. and all those devices listen to that clock. And the key is the delay it takes across these network devices, switches or media converters or whatever you're using. That latency is, they use the word hop to describe the time it takes that packet to get from this box through a switch to the next box. And that number of hops is eventually going to be something you run into, that the clock can't get there in a time that solves this problem. So there really isn't any time for error correction, like you're saying. So what else have we tacked on we want to cover on the Ethernet topic?
Multiple bit streams?
As far as multiple channels or multiple bit streams from one device to many?
No, multiple to multiple, which is also a clock issue.
Yeah.
And you can use that clock to align the bit streams.
Correct. So if you have many devices that are sending audio and many devices that are receiving it, it gets complicated quick as far as who can get the clock in what amount of time, and that's where this latency problem, the timing of getting that clock there in time, is key to having everything line up. Thankfully, in the 100 meg world, this has been historically somewhat problematic with the 7 switch hops, but if you get into gigabit, now that the switch hops is more tolerant, the term you use for Ethernet AVB of, they use the term presentation time, which is, you quoted this 2 millisecond time, which is across 7 hops at a 100 megabit data rate on Ethernet. And that's the concept that the packets are smart enough and the system is smart enough and the AVB switches that you use are smart enough to sort of pre-allocate the bandwidth needed to get the data that you've told it needs to get to all these locations.
Has
to get there in this amount of time. And the network can tell you if it's able to do that. And if it's not able to do it, it won't even send it. So there's a lot of smarts in the AVB approach to this versus the Cobranet or Dante approach. Dante's much closer to the AVB world, but AVB goes a whole other step farther in making the network smart enough to ignore the fact that, oh, I can't do that. Sorry, you're out of luck. You have to fix this, and, which is fascinating.
The question you got about multiple data streams, is there a global common word clock that to reference all of them together?
Yes, but we're only talking within a facility where you have a network, not external to that.
No, but if you had a situation with multiple networks because of the way you configured it,
yeah.
How do you keep everything sync? I'll give you an example. We switched one of our settings to partially meter and some of them using wedge monitors.
Yeah.
The band was out of sync because the finite time it takes
from a wedge. That's exactly what latency is all about.
Right. So when you have multiple data streams, say if you have a multi-system environment, can you reference the clock so they all sync like a time?
That's the intent. That's the intent of AVB, is to line them up.
Yeah.
That's what that box does.
Yeah, that's what this will do.
That's a deep topic. We could spend 2 days on that topic alone.
No kidding. We could.
Because it changes the way the band plays completely based on that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You have to be careful with the difference between the transport time to get it over the network,
right.
And it's a very different thing to ask the question, once you're in the digital audio in this box, how long does it take to get out of the analog thing into the speaker?
Right.
And that tends to be a much larger number than any of these numbers we're talking about of latency.
Right.
So I wouldn't blame your in-ear monitor or your monitor wedge delay problem on necessarily the network time.
Right.
I would blame it on the difference between the conversion for the ADD or D to A's or both from one destination to the other.
Yeah. They all play a part. And that's the problem. When you get to like 100 milliseconds, you can't even play with what you're hearing. I mean, it's just, there's no correlation in the human ear, you know.
So as an example, even this term he's using of presentation time, it might be 2 milliseconds to deliver it on the network, but it might be 2 milliseconds of latency on the A to D and D to A side, and that's where it's going to ruin your wedge monitoring problem. Yeah.
You could see the trend in the industry. If you just take Blu-ray DVD players, they're going away with analog audio because of lip sync issues.
Sure.
And it's hard to find a DVD player with analog audio outs.
And I'm going to cut our conversation about that off right there. And we have a lot of other stuff to get to today. Are we good with measurement now?
I think so.
Okay, so I'm seeing the question. Oh, the device is back there. Okay, Rick's gizmo.
Well, I'm going to play with it later.
Okay, so the next part of our meeting here is going to be getting up and going to the back. And we're going to open cookies. And we're going to move the chairs so that they're off to the side, and you could stack a few of them up so that we have some floor space open. Don't do it quite yet, though. I want to. I'm preparing you for what's coming up next. So that is what we're going to do. I said cookies. Oh, there's a stampede. So what we are going to do now, we have six sets of consoles set up in the back, consoles and digital snakeheads. Each is connected by at minimum, 150-foot cable, and at the maximum, a 200 or 328-foot cable. We're going to string that stuff out, and we'll make some loops or something on the floor and try to keep the cables from getting tangled up. And we're going to see if we can disrupt the data flow from snakehead to console or console to snakehead. We have speakers set up monitoring both ends of the digital chain. This side is feeding off of the console, I think, and that side is feeding off the snakehead. So there's a bunch of speakers on the floor on each side. The impetus for this activity, as well as the impetus for this meeting, came from a show that I did where the consoles were set up. And I was pulling on one of the snake systems, which was made up of separate wires, Ethernet cable, power cable, and there was an analog 4-pair in the mix too, which is irrelevant, I think. And I was pulling it and kind of pulling it underneath some table legs to get it laid out the way I wanted it to. The PA was on. There was no music being played through it. The console was on. Everything was functioning. I'm pulling on it, and I hear this out of the PA speakers. Oops. What the hell was that? And I stopped pulling, and it stopped. And my front of house guy and I looked at each other, and I went, oh, my God. And then I pulled it again, and the and stopped pulling, and it stopped again. So I tried to replicate that back in my shop. Well, let me back up. We looked at each other. We put the cable in place. The show went for 5 days. It was fine. There was never an issue. It was cool. So
I just some guy going.
Yeah, I
have. Maybe your front of house guy messing with it.
That would be the best result, but in fact, it was coming out of the speakers. And I'm quite certain of that.
Sure, you didn't have a wise guy with an open mic in the back?
Positive. So I got home, I set up in my shop. Oh, I got to show you that part too here. Let me go to that picture. I set it up, I made a table leg space smaller. I had my phone right there. I pulled on it. I'm pulling it through. Let's see here. Where's my thing? So there's my hand, obviously. There's the table leg. This is the two Ethernet cables coming down. They're going through this squeezing, pinching space right there. There's some resistance, not a huge amount, but definitely some. And I have stopped pulling on it after I generated the noise, reached over and grabbed my camera, took a picture of my hand and the thing. I pulled it some more, and I got the cable is moving during this time through this pinching area. I got to the end of the slack there and could not pull anymore and stopped and set it up again. And I couldn't get it to do it again, and I haven't been able to get it to do it again since. So it's possible, but not easy to do. And I thought, God, it would be really great to get a bunch of people together and set up a bunch of consoles and have people do different things and try to find the precise combination of circumstances to disrupt that signal flow and or data flow, and then replicate that same activity across different types of cables and, if possible, across different types of devices to find out if the devices that I own are more susceptible to this problem, or maybe they're less susceptible than others. So we have one oddball device here. The other one that I had lined up didn't show up. I'm assuming nobody brought anything because nobody has talked to me about I brought my Ethernet or my audio gizmo. And so we will try. What we're going to do is stretch these cables out. And Dave has run some lighting cable because possibly the fact that this had power in it with a very small load going through it could have affected it. I tried it in my shop the other day, just holding a couple of cables not connected to anything to be the pinchers, and nothing happened. I ran some power through that, and I was able to I got it almost a couple of times. I could just barely hear a k, but I couldn't get it to go a k thing. So that is going to be our project for the next little while here, is to stretch these out. The two consoles in the middle have the same cable as this, but one run per each instead of two. One of these is active and one of those is not active in the picture, but here they're all active. The other four consoles have different cables, and we'll just see what we can do. At some point, we're going to stop and string out, pull that cable back. We'll string out these destructive cables, or cables we're going to destruct. One of them will just go across the floor here in a loop. We'll keep it connected to console and snake and listen to see what happens when, how many times we can drive over it with my truck out in the parking lot, and how many times we can drive over it with the scissor lift.
Hey, is this the cable I'm taking home?
You're going to take home the non-destructed part, yes. Yeah, so there's going to be a wrecked part in the middle of those two cables, I believe, unless they are impervious to this. We're going to find out that you can drive over it a million times, just like you can wrap it a million times around a ferrous object. And so there. So does that sound like fun? I hope it's going to be fun. There's two other things. After I stopped this, and I couldn't, before I started doing it again, this is a side view kind of showing the cable coming, the supply cable coming in, and then I was pulling over here on this side.
You couldn't
I think.
Make it fail again.
I could not make it fail again. This is still the fail mode pinching, and this next picture is just a slightly different angle showing the same thing, more or less. And this is the case making the space smaller there, and then these
and
are
that,
just...
Is that the same cable? Did you mark the cable at the job site?
Yes. The orange one, there's one with orange tape, which I think is in the console closest to me here in the middle. That's the one that I was able to do it with at both occasions.
Is it possible that in the process of pulling the cable, it wasn't the stretching, but some portion of the cable was being pulled across the top of some kind of environmental noise at the venue?
Somewhere other than where I could see it?
Yes.
No. No, that is definitely not possible because this was in my shop, and I know for sure there was nothing other than a pile of cable.
Right, but originally at the venue, though.
Did it fail at your shop?
It failed. I got it to fail once in my shop.
Oh.
I did. The first time I tried it in my shop, I got it to fail. Every time after that, I could not get it to fail. And the venue, the cable was isolated physically from me, and the only problem was happening when I was pulling it, and I stopped, and it stopped, and I pulled, and it started. No.
Dan, are you sure that Kathy wasn't running the microwave?
Positive.
What was the humidity on the day that you were doing it? Was it low or high?
The day that it occurred first was in March or February 27th.
But you were inside. The HVAC could drive the humidity down. Could you have gotten a static charge buildup?
Static charge buildup is a possibility, but again, it started and stopped when I pulled and did it. So my thought is if there was a static thing, it was being caused right there. Shop. Yes. Yes. Yeah, I knew exactly which cable it was. Is it possible? Do you mean electric cable or Ethernet cable?
Whatever bundle you were trying to use out there, and figure out really the same thing at front.
This is the same cable. Everything, yes. This cable here, the only thing that's the same is the Ethernet part. Back in my shop, I was using the same exact stuff. And the same location on the cable, relatively speaking. This was out at the far end of the front of house cable. Okay? Are we ready? Okay, let's move chairs over, grab cookies, grab something to drink. We need clear space here.